For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Thank you for this opportunity to share. I would like to read a discourse from Dogen's extensive record, translated by Leighton and Hakumura. The discourse is entitled Ancestral Knowledge. There are many different kinds of knowledge. There is knowledge about a red-bearded barbarian, and there is knowledge about a barbarian's red beard. There is knowledge about the heads of divine spirits, and there is knowledge about the faces of demons. All you people who want to study the way, do so by borrowing the body and mind of Buddha ancestors. If Buddha ancestors want knowledge, they borrow your knowledge and put it to use. Therefore, breaking into a smile and attaining the true eye is the profound style of Vulture Peak. Cutting off the forearm and attaining the ancestor's marrow are the exceptional tracks from Mount Song. If you are not like this, how can there be the suchness of Buddha ancestors' knowledge? You already have attained suchness, but have you completely enacted it? Losing our bodies and lives repays our debt of gratitude for receiving the knowledge of Buddha ancestors. Changing our face and turning our head, we thoroughly investigate our doubt. Even if we have thrown away both jewels and pebbles without concern, this is the time of practicing with the robe of the way, the Dharma of the way, and the mind of the way. One line in this discourse especially stands out to me. Losing our bodies and lives repays our debt of gratitude for receiving the knowledge of Buddha ancestors. The reason that this line stands out to me is because in my life, this practice has been not only life-saving, but life-creating. And the more that I come to know Sangha members here, the more obvious it becomes that I am anything but alone in feeling a great deal of gratitude for this practice. And so the question that I would like to investigate this evening is, how do we repay our debt of gratitude for this practice? And I would like to speak using the reference point of my own practice, and that's simply with the hope of speaking as authentically as I'm able to. And it's also with the risk that what I say might be tragically misguided, and so I look forward to your guidance in a few minutes. So the question is, how do we repay our debt of gratitude for this practice? To my mind, in order to investigate this question, we have to investigate the questions that underlie it. Who is it that repays a debt of gratitude? To whom is a debt of gratitude repaid? And I think that these are rearticulations of important Zen questions. Who is it that thus comes? Who holds a flower and who smiles? Or in the simplest terms, who are you? Who am I? I think that to investigate the question, how do we repay our debt of gratitude for this practice, is to investigate the question, who am I? And in this practice, to my mind, we investigate this who am I question in a specific way. we investigate, who am I? By fully experiencing our experience. By wholeheartedly engaging in our experience. We sit and we fully experience the movement of breath, the coming and going of sensations, the coming and going of thoughts, the coming and going of emotion, the coming and going of sound. We fully experience speaking and we fully experience listening. We fully experience walking, working in whatever capacity that we work. Whatever our experience is, we fully engage in it. And the reason that this matters is because when we fully engage in our experience with body, heart, and mind, it becomes clear that there is just experience. Unadorned experience, the basic fact of experience. And although this has everything to do with you and me, it's not accurate to call it mine or yours. There is this simple fact of experience. And maybe it's more apt to use terms like life's experience of life, or suchness experiencing suchness. Emptiness experiences emptiness. 10,000 things experience 10,000 things. Or we can talk about it as experience here and experience there. Experience now and experience 2,500 years ago. Or 2,500 years from now. This basic fact of experience that our practice clarifies. And so, why does this matter? This matters because this basic fact of experience is the common thread that runs throughout all beings, throughout all space and time. Coming before my experience and before your experience, before these can be thought of, there is just this basic fact of experience, just experience. And when we are familiar with this aspect of our existence that is just experience, then we can talk about, I am also like this and you are also like this. When we're familiar with this aspect of our existence, we realize our thread to people who came 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago. And we can say things like, when I turn my head, the ancestors turned their head. When you open your eyes in the morning, the ancestors opened their eyes in the morning. A basic fact of experience that is part of our existence. And I should make it clear that what I'm talking about is nothing flashy or dramatic or nothing that we can talk about attaining. What I'm talking about is simply an aspect of ourselves that is ever-present, always accessible, yet very easily obscured by the way that we go about life. And so in this practice, we fully engage in our experience to realize the common thread between us and all beings throughout space and time. And this common thread does not simply extend to Buddha ancestors. All beings throughout space and time. And becoming familiar with this also clarifies for us that we have a common thread with all beings that suffer. There is the suffering here in this room that we have a common thread to. Just in this room, I think that any of us are probably familiar with the most 10% of the suffering. Just 10% or 5% or 1% of the suffering experienced just in this room, I think, is the most that any of us could know. And then to think about the city, this country, this planet, the immensity of suffering. And so, how valuable is it to be familiar with this part of ourselves about which we can say, I am also like this, and you are also like this. And I think that when we are familiar with this part of ourselves, with this part of our existence, there arises an existential imperative to treat each other well. And this means that treating each other well is part of the way that we repay our debt of gratitude to this practice. However, this existential imperative, which we can't really, I don't think empathy is strong enough a word, this existential imperative to treat others well doesn't necessarily tell us how to do that. We need all our faculties. We need all our knowledge. Because the immensity of suffering includes physical suffering, emotional suffering, psychological suffering, relational suffering, economic suffering, political suffering, environmental suffering, ideological suffering. The list, I think, is a very long one. And we need all of our faculties and our knowledge to do our part. And at the same time, all of our faculties and knowledge are not a substitute for the existential imperative to treat each other well, which I think is one of the fruits of this practice. And also, we make mistakes. We know that we need to treat each other well, but again, our awareness is so often disengaged. We disengaged with our experience, and we end up opening our mouths, and the words that come out cause suffering to other people. We disengage with our experience, and we act in ways that perpetuate the suffering of this planet. And this is why our practice is a continuous one. It has to always be in this moment. Because when we disengage, then greed, hate, and delusion find a firm platform. And so our practice has to be in this moment, continuous. I think the practice of 5 minutes ago supports this moment's practice, but it is not this moment's practice. This practice of 5 years supports this moment's practice, but not this moment's practice. And I think that part of our practice also is realizing this common thread that extends even to the beings that cause suffering. Because I think it's easier to go there when we think about the suffering individuals and our relationship to them. But this extends through all space and time. And so we are very importantly related to the beings that cause suffering as well. And we ourselves, I don't know if anyone is exempt, but I'm not. We ourselves cause a great deal of suffering in many ways, some of which we are aware of and some of which we probably aren't. And so being aware of our relationship not only to those who suffer, but to those who cause suffering, and also being aware of our own ways of causing suffering, are very important for a few reasons. Speaking personally, I find myself less prone to slip into self-righteousness and arrogance when I am fully in contact with the fact that I cause suffering. That my existence shares this commonality with all beings, including the ones that cause suffering. And furthermore, I think that being aware of this relationship also makes us less apt to add to the polarization that is already devastating human life and life on this planet in so many ways. And so a major part of this is being aware of our experience, fully experiencing our reality right now. Because when we completely engage in this experience, it's not that greed, hate, and delusion disappear, but it seems that they have a harder time finding a foothold. Or to evoke the sixth ancestor once again, it's not that we wipe away dust. It's where could dust settle? But this is spoken, I think, from a perspective that is completely engaged. And so, I think we can repay our debt to this practice, at least partially, by fully engaging in this, fully experiencing this, so that it becomes clear that there is an aspect of ourselves that we might not be in contact with all the time, but there's an aspect of ourselves that extends through all beings throughout space and time, through the ancestors, and through suffering people, and through those who cause suffering. And by being aware in this way, we are less apt to cause the suffering and far more equipped, I think, to respond to it. So just to close, I'd like to reread the discourse from Dogen. There are many different kinds of knowledge. There is knowledge about a red-bearded barbarian, and there is knowledge about a barbarian's red beard. There is knowledge about the heads of divine spirits, and there is knowledge about the faces of demons. All you people who want to study the way, do so by borrowing the body and mind of Buddha ancestors. If Buddha ancestors want knowledge, they borrow your knowledge and put it to use. Therefore, breaking into a smile and attaining the true eye is the profound style of Vulture Peak. Cutting off the forearm and attaining the ancestor's marrow are the exceptional tracks from Mount Song. If you are not like this, how can there be the suchness of Buddha ancestors' knowledge? You already have attained suchness, but have you completely enacted it? Losing our bodies and lives repays our debt of gratitude for receiving the knowledge of Buddha ancestors. Changing our face and turning our head, we thoroughly investigate our doubt. Even if we have thrown away both jewels and pebbles without concern, this is the time of practicing with the robe of the way, the Dharma of the way, and the mind of the way. Thank you for listening, and I'd be most grateful for questions, comments, corrections.
thank you for a very provocative talk. I would think about two things, two particular things. One is, I think I need to sit with ways that I cause suffering. I think that's a good thing to sit with. I've never sat with that, like, framed that way. And, I think that's a very big question. You know, it's that I caused suffering because I was in a bad mood today and was unkind to someone. I caused suffering in many more subtle and less obvious ways than that that I have. But the other thing I want to think about is this idea of gratitude being a debt. I find that difficult. I think of gratitude as being such a positive thing, that gratitude is like the sun. It provides energy and life and all things good, and that it's not to associate it with debt, I find sort of horrifying.
Sure.
So, I mean, I sort of understand what you're saying, but anyway, I just suggest that to you as maybe...
Sure.
Helpful to add to your thinking about gratitude.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Debt is an interesting word. Has so many connotations.
Yes.
And I guess when I read the discourse, what it evokes for me is longing, maybe. A longing to reciprocate for what we've received. And so that's different, I guess, than less positive connotations for debt.
I guess I'm suggesting that you're experiencing this feeling of gratitude is reciprocating by its very being, because gratitude is such a fine thing. That is doing exactly what you're talking about.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, though. I don't know if it's enough or not, but I appreciate that.
So I don't know if I'm ready to comment yet, but I wanted to ask you to reread a line that, unfortunately, I can't remember what it is. It's a couple lines before losing our bodies and lives.
Sure. Let me go a few lines before. If Buddha ancestors want knowledge, they borrow your knowledge and put it to use. Therefore, breaking into a smile and attaining the true eye is the profound style of Vulture Peak. Cutting off the forearm and attaining the ancestor's marrow are the exceptional tracks from Mount Song. If you are not like this, how can there be the suchness of Buddha ancestors' knowledge? You already have attained suchness, but have you completely enacted it?
But I don't know if I'm ready to comment.
Sure. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Now, again, I guess you might not know what my question is, but I just, that experience might also be a construct like self. And there's perception, there's awareness, there's. Anyway, the experience that as experience is also something to investigate how and what is that to experience. But yes, it's a way of talking about our active awareness of our presence or something like that. Anyway, just one finished class.
Thank you.
I think I can comment. So, you know, if you've already attained suchness, but have you completely enacted it? I think that that is a deeper dynamic in my life that is what part of what brought me to practice. It made me want to practice Zen. It made me want to practice psychology. And it made me want to really work at something, you know, and that's beneficial in life. And I think it came from various recognitions that I had throughout my life that some people are working so hard for something that I am taking completely for granted. Whether that's, I remember feeling it in college, recognizing that I'm taking this for granted, and some students are you know, overjoyed to be there and recognize what a privilege it is. And I recognize it when, you know, I see somebody who's maybe having difficulty walking across the room, which, you know, right now in my life is not a problem, you know, but I think that's maybe the completely enacting it is. How do you, you know, really engage with your life, with the suchness of your life? And I think that was what I had sort of an unarticulated inkling of what I, why I wanted to practice. Because there's so much more there.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. The first is your talk inspired me to think about or to see how when we get in this room, when there's a sangha happening, and there's a dharma talk occurring, that there is naturally a balance of universal and particular that's happening. And it reminds me of the case that Taigen brought up from Book Serenity yesterday. You know, what is the great meaning of Buddha Dharma? And the ancestor says, what's the price of rice right now? So both elements of that meet each other for the picture to be expressed. Like if somebody just asks, what is the price of rice right now? That's you know, half, that's part of it, but you imply the universal when there's the question of what is the great meaning of Buddha Dharma. So both ends of that feed each other. So similarly, like when you're talking now about you know, what is the imperative of this practice? What is the impetus for it? And that sort of concern with our interconnectedness is balanced with the particulars of each person that's here. We're talking about it as individuals. We're always doing that. Every time we're in this room, it's particulars and universal interacting consciously, you know, like deliberately acknowledging that. So that's really wonderful. I kind of, you know, hear your talk that rose for me. The other thought I have is I'm similarly the patient. That line from the discourse is the one that was popping for me. Because it makes me think about what's the difference between being in action, you know, and acting something. Like, to be something is that different than enacting, you know. But the word that really throws me for a loop is completely. That's the gem of that line. Because when I hear completely, that's sort of, to me, the same thing as, like, we chant all the time, like, we practice to save all beings. So it's, because you can't say, have you acted? Because then you can say, oh, I did this thing the other day. Did some wholesome action, and thus, no need to show up today. But, like, the fact that Dogen throws in, have you completely enacted it, the answer is always going to be no, in my head. The answer is always, like, as long as you're breathing, as long as you are being, your imperative is, you're showing up, and what do you, how do you enact it today? Like, every day is enacting it. And even when you're dead, I guess it's not, like, as long as creation is happening, nothing's complete. You just
keep enacting, or it is enacting. You're part of it.
Thank you.
I have one question for you. When you use the word experience here, referring to what's occurring to you now, or are you referring to memory, or recollection, or to projection of what might be?
I'm not referring to imagination. And I'm not referring to something that operates independently of the consciousness that is aware of it. It's really difficult for me to say what I mean by experience. It's very difficult, and it's not because I haven't tried to figure out how to put words to it. It's because it seems to elude words. Let me try to answer it this way. I've thought about ways of expressing how I experience Zazen. And one of those ways of expressing this practice to my mind is what comes before. And whatever you put behind that, it comes before that. And so the very fundamental experience of reality being aware of itself is what I'm talking about, except it's a really probably sloppy way of saying it on my part. It's hard for me.
Where did you trust your experience?
It comes before. Because if there's a you, if there's a we, and there's a trust, it's before that.
So the experience is not assigned to an individual.
It has everything to do with you, but it's not yours. There's a wonderful line in Zen, it is you, you are not it. And I could not say it better than that. I'm at a loss, but I appreciate your question.
Thank you. You're very any last
I think your choice in the translation of using the term dead is I think it's a very Japanese idea that receipt of something beneficial, receipt of a gift, creates an obligation. And fulfilling that obligation isn't just a matter of feeling gratitude for it. There's an obligation to when you receive the dharma, that's what it's created the dharma delivered to you, your obligation is to fulfill the dharma and to connect. So, it's not like in the Lord's Prayer that debts and debtors trespass on you. That's what it's not a legal obligation, but it is an obligation. I think that to go to experience, the issue of experience, I thought your talk was tremendous, and I thought that you were able to include so much in it that I really appreciate your talk. And I think one of the problems in speaking the Dharma is that you have to use words, but you get caught,
And talking about experience can be challenging because an experience is something that this is not about.
Yeah.
And any experience, even saying, experiencing this moment or experiencing whatever, can turn that experience into an object. So there's a kind of challenge of how do we wake up to whatever there is right now without attention to it, keeping it fresh and slow. I think that's a real challenge of our practice. We're so able to turn anything into a fixed object.
To an object.
But I really like very much your this enactment allowing us to have this to enact this connection, which is ours, but it's also mine. Or not mine, but maybe ours. There's a dynamic that can be fixed again, or should not be fixed. Make a mistake as soon as you fix it.
Thank you. And just very briefly, your comment about objectifying, what came to mind for me is the Suzuki Roshi quote from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, that we have to lose ourselves in our effort. At first, I think it is my experience. It starts as that. But I think when we are wholeheartedly engaged in this, then we can talk about dropping off. And I hate to use that phrase because I don't want to misinterpret Dogen, but it's something that does resonate with me. Something drops off. And then experience. So thank you all for your comments.
Thank you for your talk. And we'll close with the four questions.